Hello, we're going to begin. I'm glad to see all of you intrepid people who have come uphill. I don't see a lot of people from downhill yet, so I hope that they actually get here or are listening, because as usual, you're responsible for what happens here. In any case, this is the first Dean's Corner in which we have our entire library family back, and that is something that's very special to me, a very special time, and I welcome everybody back, and I just want to say that I'm just very happy that we have a sense of normalcy back. I want to thank everybody who handled everything so well during the time when we didn't have everyone here, and I'm just glad that we're on to normal and ordinary times. We have many, many things to talk about today, and so I'm just going to just get with it. Okay. The first thing that I'd like to talk about is the strategic planning update. As all of you know, before, at the last Dean's Corner, or the one before that, I think it was actually in the summer, I talked about all of the things that had come from the strategic planning session that the ADs had attended. And we had set up several issues, several task forces that we were going to be putting together, work groups, whatever. And we have revisited those, we've reestablished them, and the lists will be released shortly. Just a reminder, these are real work groups. Everybody who, they're work-related, they should be put as goals in your evaluations for this year if you're a librarian or an M. But we welcome everybody's involvement. If there is a librarian who is not right now on one of these task forces, we will definitely find the task force for you, because no one will get left out. We do all of these. We'll begin the beginning of March. I'll sit on the first meeting of each group and talk about what we hope to get out of the group. Some of them will function as steering committees, such as the one on collections. Others will actually be working groups and will do the work themselves. And as I said, we will make sure that anyone who is interested will have something, will have an involvement and be able to participate as much as they possibly want to. We are going to be going through a lot of things today, and there will be several speakers, so hold your questions till the very end, and as usual, we will entertain questions, anything and everything. Brune is signed on, so if you have questions from the outside, be sure and send them in. I do hope that people, particularly with weather like this, I can tell you that I walked up the hill, and you can do it on clear sidewalk. And it's much more fun if you're actually at these meetings instead of phoning in from a distance. And with that, I would like to ask Isabel to come and go through our HR update for us. Okay. There you go. Sorry.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Because I know that it's on a lot of people's minds, I'll start with collective agreement updates. Let's start with the MUNACA collective agreement. Employee relations and the MUNACA executives are currently working hard with finalizing the text for the target date that was announced in mid-February. It's taking a bit more time than what was expected, but both parties are hopeful that they'll meet that target date of February. And as soon as the texts are finalized, we'll have information session targeted to talk about the changes, so we are more familiar with them. Concerning the MU's negotiations are going well, and the only things that are left to be negotiated are the monetary issues. For the people who are not familiar with the MU's group, this is the new union on campus representing casual employees. Now on the fun side, Library Excellence Awards. This is a gentle reminder that you have until February 19 to submit your submission form. You can find the nomination forms on the library website. You have the link on the screen. These awards are an excellent tool to recognize colleagues that are making outstanding contribution to McGill and to the McGill libraries. Mardi Gras Carnival Party in replacement of our Christmas parties. We are at the final stage of the planning of the Mardi Gras party, so if you have not RSVP yet, please do so as soon as possible. It's going to be a lot of fun. Can I share a little bit of the secrets? With music and mask, and everybody are welcome to come costume. So we really, really hope that you will all attend the party. Career milestones. So a few weeks ago, we had a little get-together to celebrate the career milestones achievement of 2011. So to just go briefly over the 2011 recipients, for the 25 years, we have Barbara Craig, Klaus Fiedler, Francis Yalenti, Cynthia Levy, Mohamed Emil Rahman, and Sharon Rinkin. The 35 years recipient in 2011 were Anna Del Balzo, Mary Fukasawa, Joanne A., Sylvia Little, Valerie Maiman, Maureen Rahman, and Irene Wu. And Dorothy Lawson was our 45 years recipient in 2011. So congratulations to all of you for that achievement. On the a little update on the 2011 Quarter Club Century Gala that was postponed. We still don't have a date. We're hoping to have more news really, really soon. So I'll keep you posted. Staff update. So since the month of September, since our last Dean's Corner, there was a lot of movement internally. So we have hired a few new liaison librarians. One of them is with us today. So Robin, if you could maybe stand up. So Robin joined Life Science as a liaison librarian in September at the same time as Jennifer Zhao, and they were followed by Giovanna Badia that joined Schulich with Jennifer in October. From an internal transfer, we have Andrela Miller Nesbitt, who joined Life Science also in the month of, well, it was supposed to happen in September. Got delayed by a few months. There was Maya Kusij, who is currently replacing Sarah Older on her sabbatical leave in education. Megan Fitzgibbon joined also the education library in replacement of Maya. We have Cheryl Smeal that will soon leave Life Science to join ILL with the team of Valerie Maiman, and Lori Cloda, who's currently on a leave but is the new assessment librarian. We said also a few goodbyes since September, and there's Jim Anderson, who left us in December to enjoy his retirement. And we have also lost Passan, who has left us in September. There's also Lindsay Sikora from Life Science, Graham Lavender, who just left us after Christmas. There's Jane Watson-Sivigny from Schulich Library, who took another assignment in the Faculty of Medicine, so she's close. And soon it will be Maria Savova, who will be leaving us next week. Her last day is next Tuesday. From a recruitment point of view, today we finish our last job talk for the e-resources librarian. So the search committee will look at the three applicants and make recommendations to the dean. We have currently open and posted a liaison librarian position for life science and also a second posting for the associate director for digital initiative. So we're currently collecting CVs. Those positions are open for a month, and we'll start the search as soon as the application period is closed. Still coming, and I hope to post them very shortly. There's a position in Rare Books, liaison librarian for the history of science, and also the position of head of the Osler Library. And finally, but not last, in March, March, we will be hosting an intern from South Africa. Her name is Dilshad Bray. She'll be joining the Law Library for 7 weeks, and the objective of this internship is to learn how a library in a research university supports the needs of the faculty and researchers vis-a-vis their information needs. So that's it for me. I don't know if anybody has any questions.
Will the, when it is signed, will the NACA collection be available in print or just online?
It usually takes a while to be available in print because we have to print 1,700 copies. So usually the first format is electronic, but paper copies usually follow in the next few days. So I guess for facilities update, we have Francisco.
Good afternoon, everyone. I just want to go over to all the facilities updates. During these past months, we've done several projects. Some of them we start catching up again. And I just want to go briefly to show you the ones we're currently working in. First, we're going to start with the Hustle Service Desk. This is everything started with a working group that Amber chair. There's been a lot of opinions and a lot of involvement of all the staff in that section. And right now, what we're doing is we're already in the work in progress, which means we're renovating what is the self-serve reserve room, which is the room that is going to have. We're renovating completely, so it's going to have new carpet, new paint. We're going to put some compact shelving for the DVDs. As you might be aware of, this is the room where we're going to be transferring due to the asbestos from Redpath Library Building. So we're transferring that room to McLennan Library on the main floor. And I'll show you a map a minute. We're adding as well, make it easy to access, make it next to the returns area. So we did some opening on the walls to have everything as a single unit. And as part of that, we're doing as well the consultation zone, which the working group has been trying to figure out which is the best location, if we put it on one side or the other. And I think we're all now into a commitment so that it gets located next to the opposite of the printing area, which is on the same surroundings of the service desk. This is the floor plan. So as you can see, the self-reserve collection is the room that it used to be the E-classroom that's being currently transformed. You'll see on the right side, there's going to be the compact shelving housing all the DVDs collections that we currently have in Redpath. Then on the fixed shelves, there's going to be the remaining of the collection. We're trying to have everything into that same scenario. There's going to be security antennas on both sides so that the students can do it by themselves using the quick check machines, which are going to be on the top left section of that room. And then the info desk is just going to be in front of it. So there's easy access. The windows, they have been replaced so that it's clear windows. We brought natural light to the room. And we're trying to make this as comfortable and as easy of use for everyone. If we look into the other side, the left side, we have the returns room, which if you can notice that there's a wall that is missing over there. We remove that wall, try to integrate everything into the same area. You'll see that the single service desk, we're working already on that. We don't have the full final layout, but this is one of the first sketches that we have on that nature. If you look on the rear section of the room, there's going to be carpet installed over there. There's going to be furniture, paint job as well. It's going to happen on that area. And we're trying to isolate the noise as much as we can. We're going to do some improvements as well on the book returns, so that it's not as noisy as current. And we're trying to make this as best as possible. What is the impact of this? The impact for the students, well, basically is to be a one-stop service desk. So a student will be able to go in and out, pick up the DVDs or the CDs, instead of just browsing on the catalog as current. So what is the impact for the staff is that the staff will be able to collaborate and work closely together. There's going to be as well a lot of training involved on that. So the staff that is on the front line and some of the librarians, they're going to go to get some training to upgrade their skills and make sure everything is in sync with this new reconfiguration. For the librarian assistants, they're going to be the first ones. They're going to be the first line of support. And then for the librarians and the documentation technicians, there's going to be the consultation zones, or there can be as well on-call depending on the scenario. Now, tied to this project, and this goes back then to RedPath, is the asbestos abatement. I think you remember that because of this, everything started for the single desk. Right now, the status on that is we're going for tender, because any job that is more than 100K, we have to go to a tender process. So right now, that part is currently underway. There's been identified where the areas that there's the asbestos. I'll be able to show it in a minute. But then the impact for the students is as well. I mean, there's going to be noise around the area. There's not going to be dust, because whenever we talk about asbestos, they isolate the area completely. So they put like airtight seal. They change the pressure, so that is negative pressure. And then nothing is behind those walls. No one is allowed except the construction team and the CSST and all those teams they're fully aware of, and they work with us in a normal basis. Aside to that, I mean, we're going to offer alternate workspace for everyone that is around that area that might feel that it's uncomfortable or so. We're offering that as well to make sure, you know, we understand all different scenarios, situations, and make sure you're comfortable in your workplace. Inconvenient as well, there's going to be the access for a period of time, because if you see on the layout, the areas that are in pink, those are the ones with the asbestos, and we showed this picture to you already. If we look at the red section, that's the area where we currently house all the reserves and the staff, so that's the part that we're going to be relocating to McLennan. And then you'll notice as well where now we have the writing center and the new e-classroom and so on. That area is just to be determined, depending on the engineers, if there's a way that they can find a path so that they can access the place. What we know until now is that for sure the access to the Tim Hortons, the CyberTech, and as well the access to the staircase that takes us to the second floor, that's going to be available. But they're still working on in the final details for that. And once we know who's going to be the contractor, once that tender is over, then we're going to know the exact details. Now we go to the terrace project, which this one, we're already at phase two. Phase one was all the tunnel that is done. The company that is doing it is, the project manager is Randall, and there's two companies over there. There's BPR for the engineer, and there's Renault and Bray is the second firm. The timeline for the second phase. If you just see on the map, the phase one was all the tunnel. Phase two is where we have the entrance of the McLennan Library building up to the halfway of Red Path. That means before the door, in the main door in Red Path. Why? Because we need this access and we need to be able to access, exit the building in any sort of scenarios. So the impact on that, of course, is going to be noise, because that involves demolition. They need to add a French drain on the area, so they're going to do some elevation and they're going to fully support the terrace. Access is going to be restricted at some point. We're trying to figure out if there's a way that they can do an alternate entrance for the Red Path, for the McLennan building. We're still working that part. If possible, yes. If not, we'll just need to use the current other exits that we have from the ground floor on McLennan and going via Red Path Terrace. This is how the architects, this is the first look that they gave us. Basically, what they're trying to do is keeping the same style of the tunnel. They're going to reuse the same type of granite. If you notice there, they're reusing the stones, which currently the stone is the one surrounding the edge. They're using that as seating areas, so we can reuse the stone. And then in order to put the terrace up to par, up to building code, they need to add the glass railing all around. So we're not sure if it's going to say something or if it's going to be plain, but that's what the architects show us until now, which goes in line with the phase one that they just finished. If you look on the McLennan side, you'll see part of a green area, which we're trying to see what is the best option, and then this goes as well to the architectural committee to see if it's a mix of flowers, if they put sort of like a garden or so, but they're working right now on those solutions, and that's what they present to us recently. And then once we know what's going to be the output, definitely we're going to update you and present you the plan. If we move to the other project, which is the integration of McLennan and Red Path, this is a big project. And at this time, what we're going to start doing is a pre-design. In order to do a pre-design, we need to go for tender. We need to get a firm of architects and a firm of engineers and make sure they absorb all of our ideas and try to get us to some options. And then we'll be able to work in tandem, Colleen, the provost, and all the facilities team to see feasibility, to see if there's the funds, and see if we can make it happen. For the pre-design part of it, we're starting already doing the selection of the architect, which is going to be done by mid-2012. The pre-design itself is going to take 6 months. Be aware that this is a huge project because that involves changing not only a wall, that means changing all the systems of the building. So it's basically starting from scratch. So there's a lot of work for the architect, for the engineers, and maybe at that point you're going to see them around getting some samples and walking around just to get the real look and feel of the building and work with all the plans that we already have. What is the scope of work? As I said, the analysis, consultation, because in order to do this project, I mean, we want to make sure we cover the students, the staff, and every stakeholder that is in the building. You know that aside libraries, we have food services, and we have teaching and learning. We have single service points, so we have a mix. And we want to make sure everyone is considered and it's consulted. And once we get the initial designs, we're going to be asking for your feedback as well. As well, the impact, I mean, fantastic opportunity. Send us your comments once we start working that process. Last but not least, CyberMed, which basically we're in this building. It's going to happen on the second floor. We're trying to do a mix of cyber tech, but now in the life sciences library. And this is a joint project. It's a joint project with libraries, teaching and learning, and as well with the Faculty of Medicine. There's a need on this CyberMed because Faculty of Medicine is looking for bigger rooms. The rooms that they currently have, they're not big enough for teaching to their students. And then on our end, we try to integrate the 24-hour access. CyberMed is going to be on the second floor, and that's the only floor on this building that will allow us to do that because there's a separate entrance to the building. So that's why we're trying to do it over there. The plan is really to go fast. We try to get this project done by December 2012. So it's really ambitious, and we have a tight schedule. That's why we're asking for your feedback and for your opinions. And I know Susan and Chris have been working with all their teams to make sure there's feedback on that, and we work all together with the project manager on this. Before doing this CyberMed, currently on the second floor, we have the staff lounge. So before starting all the CyberMed project, we need to move the staff lounge, which is going to go to the fourth floor, room 401. The layout and so on has been approved already, and we're already moving towards the furniture and the colors that they're going to go into the place. And then just by moving the staff room, there's going to be as well noise in that area. We don't expect to have any dust or any other problems because it's inside those closed doors in the main core of the building. But as well, if at any point you have any comments or so on, you're more than welcome to send us an email to the renovation team, which is Diane, Amber, myself, Susan, and Chris for this project as well. And they're all we're all attending the meetings and making sure there's proper communication with the project manager and the professionals. If I show you the layout, this is how it looks the second floor. Basically, all the left side is what we call Zone 1, which is going to be a group of rooms that they can be smaller or bigger, depending on the size of the group. They'll be able to house up to 80 students, and there's three sections of them. Or with the partition, they'll be able to section them, depending on their need. If you see the Zone 2, that's going to be group study rooms, the same on the up and on the lower section. We're trying to be able to add as much seats as possible, although because of the shape of the building, there's as well some restrictions on that. CyberTech will be the zone number 3, which you'll see it marked in yellow. We're trying to maximize the capacity as much as we can. This building itself, it has its own problems, and I'm sure Susan or Chris know that already. But we're trying to work around to make sure everybody it's into this mix. MedIT, which is currently on the second floor, they're planned to stay there and be able to support all the computers, the logistics that are going to be happening in the whole CyberMed. Last but not least, our website. So any updates, they're going to be posted on the website. There's the contact information in there, but again, if at any point in any of the projects that I just mentioned, if you feel that there's something not going on or you need to contact us, feel free to do so. We try to either send the question to the professionals, or if we know the answer, we'll try to get back to you as soon as possible. I'll pass the microphone to Joseph. Questions will be at the end.
Yeah, I just have a short collection services update. One is the budget. I want to say thanks to the team in collection services for helping us get back on track. Around December 1st, we had only spent about 21% of the budget, but now we're up to about 75%, so that's tracking as normal. But for the liaison librarians out there, if you haven't spent your budget yet, please spend it. Because if you haven't, by April 1st, we'll have to look at the wish list and figure out what else we'll purchase with that money if we haven't spent it all. So if you have any questions, talk to Valerie Fortan, and she'll help you with that. If you need to know how much of your budget is or isn't spent and you need, and you're not sure about that, just let us know, and we'll work with you on that to make sure that you can get that spent on time. We've had a lot of new things that we've worked with over the last several months, and one is the ProQuest deal. We now own everything from ProQuest. It's a deal that we worked out. It took many months to get it up and going, but we now have that deal through. We also did the same with Gale. We worked from lists of requests that all the liaison librarians had submitted. We looked and we saw there was a lot of Gale products, so we decided we would work on a package there, and we have all of those going. So right now those are available on those sites. Another is the Hathi Trust. We're now a member. We have the Shibboleth working there, which is needed for the authentication so that you can log in to see the resources that we can access as a member of that. And we've put the information about that on the blog. We're again buying the new year materials from Elsevier, Springer, Wiley, all of those different products. With everything going on with that and EasyProxy, we're looking ahead. Hopefully we'll have a new e-resources librarian soon, and we're hoping sometime in March we can have a collection services update and have some time to go into some of these new resources a little more in depth. Heather Kai would like to talk to you about EasyProxy and where we are with that. We'd like to show you where we are with HathiTrust and all of those. So we're hoping that we will have time to do all of that sometime in March. So that's my update. Any questions? Who's next?
All right, so we are here to give you the LTS update, and there's a few things that we are going to share with you. First thing to mention, some of you may be aware, we migrated the website, or at least we kicked off the migration in January, moving from the old system to the university's new web management system. The impact is that the migration happened in January. There is actually still migration work that's going on. We have a few applications that are still being moved over. We have some content that still needs to be optimized, and that'll be sort of an ongoing process, and we've prioritized that work, and we're working through it as fast as we can. The biggest thing right now, which is our primary focus, is restoring edit access for everyone to the site. And that's something right now that we have worked out a solution. We have got all the green lights to go ahead, and we are now working with ICS to put that into place. And it's really just a question now of how quickly those wheels are going to turn. The edit access, when it comes back, it'll probably be restored gradually just because of how it needs to be done. Top priority will be given first to subject guides and course guides, and then it'll roll out after that as well. But when I say it'll roll out gradually, I mean over the course of a week, not the course of a month. So you'll be getting updates on that, and I'll keep you all informed probably both via email and via the blog. We also have some exciting stuff that's going to be coming up with this website, because this website gives us some really, the new system, I should say, gives us some great capabilities. So in the coming year, we have a few very interesting things, I think, that we're going to be working on. Top of the list is going to be taking a look at how we handle subject guides and course guides, not only because it's been a while, but also because we have some really, I think, exciting opportunities with the university's new learning management system, Desire to Learn, which is going to give liaison librarians some really, I think, interesting and powerful tools to help them with their liaison work. And so it's a really good time for us to stop and think about how we want to move forward with this. And so there will be project teams formed for this with proper representation. And outside of those project teams, there will be opportunities for everybody to participate, to give feedback, not just librarians, staff, students, faculty as well. Okay, and we'll be posting all that information out, and it'll all be as transparent and forthcoming as possible. But for anything regarding the website, please feel free to get in touch with me at any time. Call me, email me, my calendar's up to date, book me for a meeting. I'm there to help you in any way that I can. So, and now I'll let you talk about some of the other cool stuff.
Just to give a, we've got a lot of digitization projects on the go, obviously, but there are two main ones that I wanted to make sure everybody was aware of. In our last strategic planning meeting, One of the outcomes was that we were going to retrospectively digitize about 12,000 theses and dissertations. These are the earliest theses and dissertations from McGill. Here's a look at our setup that we have. That's Derek, one of our students. Basically, this project is going to take a number, probably two full years to do. 12,000 is a large number. But all of these will be digitized and made available through eScholarship at McGill. So we will eventually have eScholarship be the home of all theses and dissertations at McGill. So I think it's a great resource, and that's publicly available to anybody with internet access. So that's one big project. So you will see frequently see postings for work study students. If you get any questions from work study students, it's likely this project that I'm looking for people for. We just hired five students for this semester to keep all the workstations running as much as possible. The other project I wanted to bring to your attention, which is a really unique one, is the Rare Books and Special Collections have a very unique collection of chapbooks. Now, chapbooks are little tiny books, and we have been working to digitize these. We're going to also, the end will be a really wonderful digital collection using some text encoding initiatives, which is the next wave of digital collections. Digital collections are obviously more than just pictures. We want to evaluate the text. Some researchers want to evaluate the type of paper that this stuff is printed on. So these will be very, very fun to see. We've also hired two students to work on this project. We have a great digitization setup for it. We bought a new station, so we do very high quality work. And so look forward to this, more news about this. I'm very excited about this project. I think it's great fun and a great way to show the world the unique collections that we have. So that's just, there's a close-up of one of them. Given the equipment that we have can do very high resolution scanning, because that book is really, it's about this big. It's tiny. So just so you can see that. And then finally, this will be, you want to jump in on this as well? If you haven't checked out the yearbooks that we've digitized, please do. It's yearbooks.mcgill.ca. We used some new page-turning software on it. It's mobile-enabled, full-text searchable, and we actually went proofread every single name that's in there so that you can look up William Shatner and find it, no problem. And we're up to about 1992 so far, and we're going to get the rest of them in, and then we're also going to add all of the Mac campus yearbooks. So this will be, you'll be able to look up pretty much anybody, including some of you guys, anybody who went here. So did you have anything you want to say about
it? Just as an example of some of the interesting things you can find in the yearbook, McLennan reference, 1976. As I posted on Twitter, oh my God, it's full of cards. So that's sort of an interesting flashback. And so I was thinking maybe we could have a treasure hunt of some sort, people going through and picking up all the old library photos that are available in there. But it's really amazing to see how much things have changed and evolved over time. So it's really, I think, an incredible resource. And we're looking forward to having the full run up. And we'll be posting progress notes for folks as well to let you know. Now that we're moving into the years where people are alive, the interest is really picking up, we find, quite a bit.
Is that it?
That's it.
And that's all we had for LTS. Cheers.
Thank you. I'm trying to figure out where this is exactly. And not that I'm old, but I became a librarian in 1976. And I kind of remember libraries like that, sort of, barely. One thing I wanted to mention is that a lot of our digitization projects are funded and supported by philanthropy. And we have an active development program going on. We meet once every 2 weeks or so, sometimes once a week, to talk with all the people who are involved in those projects. And we are actually being fairly successful, not on the scale I would like to be, but philanthropy is a large part of my job, because finding resources to do all the things that all of you need done is a huge part of my responsibility. I hate to put Louis on the spot, but I think I'm going to. And invite him down to introduce his two new librarians, whom I will also put on the spot and ask to come here so everybody can actually see them. So if the three of I think I saw Jennifer come in, and Giovanna, and Louis. You have to come down here so that people can see, and just introduce people really quickly. This is a sort of thing that we will probably be doing a lot, so I don't want to embarrass anybody in particular, but I think it's important that people know what people look like.
Well, all right, so you heard the name before at the beginning, so it's my pleasure to introduce to you Jennifer Zhao, who came in September 1st. She came from a private company, pharmaceutical company, a few years of experience there. The other one is Giovanna Badia to my left, to your right, who came on October 15 in Schulich. She came from the Royal Vic Victoria Hospital, spent a few years there. That's it. Thanks a lot.
More specifically, the chapbook digitization project is being supported by the Harold Crabtree Foundation. Just in case you're curious, the most number of people that we had signed on from a distance was during Francisco's presentation. Yeah. Isabel's disappointed. And it was 67 people. I would like to encourage all of those 67 people to get more exercise in coming up the hill. It would be nice to see your faces here, but I am glad that if you couldn't make it up the hill, that you are signed on from a distance. Mark can tell you that having to go up and down the hill for a semester is good for your blood pressure. And everybody from Life Sciences and Osler does it daily. Law, education, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to open up the floor. I can tell you it's a little bit difficult to see down here. So if I can't see, we are going to turn on the lights. That's good. Good. Yes, there's a microphone here. So if you have a question, please come to the microphone, not so that we can hear, but so that the people at a distance can hear, because there are more of them than there are of us. And I encourage questions from the hinterlands as well, and Bruna will give us those questions. So do we have any questions about anything or any of our presentations? I know you have to go over the river and through the woods to get to the microphone.
It's a long walk for a short question. Francisco's last slide mentioned that the phase one of the Redpath renovation project was 90% completed. Could we have an idea of what the remaining 10% is, what it consists of, and when we expect it to be finished?
For which one? For
the Redpath renovations. If you go to your last slide.
Can I do it on this one? Yeah, I think. Let's do it in here.
Next one. Forward. Next one after that. Next one after that. Okay. The Redpath Library building project is 90% complete, phase one.
No, that's just a screenshot. And that, if you see, it's from April 2011.
Okay,
that's just
so
a screenshot for the website.
That's a slide because, from the past.
Yeah. No. Okay. It's just that website. Any update is going to be in here. So if there's drilling, an electrical shutdown, or so on, we have a section that is called News of the Day, and you'll be able to see any updates on that one.
Okay, so this is news from a previous day.
Right. Yeah, this is we have it since we started the projects already, and Marika is always updating the website.
There's no doubt that the two projects, that the asbestos abatement project and the first half of the terrace project this summer, are going to be disruptive. If you thought last summer was fun, wait till this summer. And there's nothing to do but just deal with it, you know, because we'll try to have a good time in the meantime. But it is going to be disruptive, there's no doubt. Other questions? Yes, for everybody else. Yeah. Yeah, I could repeat it, Angela, if that's okay.
It concerns CyberMed.
Okay.
I think Francisco said that the MedIT technicians will be the technical support for the CyberMed facility. Is that correct?
The question is whether the Med IT support staff will be the support staff for the medical cyber tech.
Yes, in that note, we're actually working with the Med IT. We're working as well with NCS to make sure that at this point we're doing the zoning of the area. So right now, what we're trying to get the approval is on what goes where, and then we're going to start looking into the equipment of the rooms. That being said, I mean, Med IT and NCS, we're going to work together with the project manager to make sure all the technology that's going to be in there, it's going to be fully supported. And because we want this space to be 24/7, to make sure as much as they can to support this this project.
Susan Marie, I just have a comment from a meeting that other people couldn't attend this week. There's a lot of discussion about if there'll be a lot of fixed computers or not, or whether it might be people bringing things in. So the equipment thing may not be the same issue.
Mm-hmm. If the computers, if they're going to be supported by MedIT, whether they'll have a MedIT image or whether the computers will have a library image.
The question is if the computers are going to have a MedIT image or a library image. What I can answer is at this point, we're doing the zoning of the area. We haven't yet get in deep into the furniture, the equipment that is going to be in there. For sure, once we start looking at the details, we're going to be considering the type of technology, who's going to be supporting it, and so on. But at this point, and due to the time frame, the project manager, this decision was go by the zoning. Once that accepted, we'll go into detail on each zone.
Is it something that's being discussed?
No. At this point, we start a discussion, but it's nothing final yet. What we're trying to get first is the approval for the zoning. And then we go into detail.
It's essentially we aren't there yet. You know that, yeah. What we first have to do is to deal with some of the descriptions of needs. But there'll be plenty of time to give input.
I think
okay.
What you need to be aware of is that it's very difficult for us when we use 409 to get applications loaded onto the computers in 409. For example, we've been trying for many, many months to get them to load EndNote 5. We're still working with EndNote 4. We're unable to show RSS feeds in the browsers because that feature has been disabled. So we are really held back in our training when we use 409. So I don't know if any of the space is designated for teaching or for library use. And if it is, will we face the problems we now face with 409?
We will. We're hearing what you say, and hopefully, Susan, that you can take some of those current issues and we can get them addressed.
I have a question.
I have another question up here. Thank you.
Hi. I'd just like to know if the room bookings in the cybertech here will be restricted as the hustle ones, or are they going to be on the banner table to book?
I think that's the sort of question, again, that we don't know an answer to yet. We just aren't there yet. You guys are jumping, you know, my boss, I did the same thing to my boss recently, and he said, Colleen, you're 3 months ahead. But I think that there's obviously something between the lines there, and it sounds like you could give some good advice to how they set it up, I suspect. Brunin,
yes,
do you have a question?
There's a question from Brian McMillan. Actually, there's two questions. First, he logged on 5 minutes late, so he sort of missed the what you covered for the single point. The first thing is, can you clarify what McGill's single service point will look like? That's question number one. Question number two is, there is a door that looks like it will lead to the cybertech in the tunnel between McLennan and Redpath. Will that be a permanent alternate entrance to library buildings?
Okay. So let's see. If we go question number one, this is the layout that we have for the service desk. The desk itself, we're working with the designer to give us the sketch. They send us some sketches and so on, and we're working right now to be able to present and to finalize. Again, all these projects, Amber is the chair that is working with the groups. So if there's any comment for this or for any other projects, feel free to send it to us so that we can send it and, to the proper teams and work with them together. Sorry. And in this one, I know Amber has been chairing that working group, and they've been going and looking at different scenarios, different furniture to make sure everyone is comfortable on that. If we go to, and I don't think I have, well, let's look it in here. The section that they're referring to, it's downstairs, which would be, well, let's say, yeah, if we grab the small picture, yeah. There's an entrance right on this side, which before used to be the old printing, and then libraries were not using that unless it was an emergency door. What's going to happen in that section is that now there's going to be the office for students with disabilities. They're going to be moving into that area. So basically all the storage that we used to own, now it's part of their project. They're going to be doing some demolition, and they expect to have that that area for the 1st of September. I don't have a sketch right in front of me, but we'll be able to put it as well onto the renovations website. I'm part of those meetings as well, and if there's anything at that point that you need to know, feel free to send me an email, and I will send Marika the images or the information that we have until now, the look, but that doesn't mean that that's going to be our entrance. That's going to be the entrance for them. If there's any student with disabilities that needs the elevators, there'll be a door at the end so that they can pass through that, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be an alternate entrance for us. It is going to be just for emergency purposes, because at that point all the doors, they open by itself and everyone can evacuate the building. But it's not a library entrance.
Brian says, actually, this question was more for Colleen. I'm not so interested in the physical appearance of the single service point, but more the philosophy behind it and who will work on it. And sorry for the misunderstanding.
Okay. Amber's not here, is she? So I will, I'll punt, and if something has to be changed from this, then we'll get out more information. I mean, basically what we're doing is something that's been happening throughout research libraries across the world, but particularly in North America for some time, and that is the realization that users would like to have one place to go to ask questions. Many of our branch libraries have functioned essentially with a single desk for a very long time. It just makes it easier on people. But even if we were not philosophically disposed that way, the reality of the fact is that we have to go to a single service point in Hustle right now, because we can't have people working in a negative vacuum space where the asbestos abatement is happening. And that's going to happen. That's going to occur for several months. There's also, and one thing that I was thinking of when Francisco was talking about this space, is that by virtue of having, through necessity, to go to a single service point for X amount of time, we have the true luxury of being able to experiment with this space in a way that that's very enviable, because we will be trying it on, taking risks, seeing what works. If it doesn't work, we get to change in terms of staffing patterns, what kinds of staff, the relationship between the consultation space, which will be primarily for more in-depth questions, primarily staffed by librarians, and the single service point where simpler questions will be asked and more difficult questions will be triaged to the consultation space. the way the staffing patterns for that work, who answers what questions, the furniture, the usage patterns, when where we see how users move from space to space within our larger space. We get to try all this out in terms of the plans for the larger renovation of the entire Red Path floor. So we are in the very advantageous position of being able to experiment with things and try things out and see what works, and if it doesn't work, we change it. So there's nothing that's going to be, I mean, there's a lot of granite around here, I have to admit, and a lot of stone, but there's not going to be much with this that's not pretty flexible and that we won't try on. But there's a whole lot of experience out there and best practices in the research library world in terms of single service points. We are not on the bleeding cutting edge with this at all. So I think that that answered Brian's question. So, any other questions from near or far? Yes. Yes. The question is,
will there be a new name when the two libraries merge?
Okay, the question is, will there be a new name for McLinn and Redpath when they merge? Well, the buildings are Redpath and McLinn, those aren't going to change. But if someone came and gave us $200 million, I don't know, we might be able to do something about the library, the virtual library, having another name for that kind of philanthropy. And if you know someone, send them my way. Or two people who want to share in the glory. That would be wonderful. And I actually don't dismiss things like that. I mean, you have to dream big if you're going to get anywhere. Other questions?
Yes. It's just a small point for the whole renovation process. I know, for instance, Life Sciences bought a bunch of really nice-looking furniture when they did the most recent renovation, which is ergonomically terrible. I was wondering how much ergonomics are going to take into consideration when it comes to buying new furniture for service points, stuff like that, because it actually is quite painful to sit at those desks because they look great, but they're actually destroying us slowly.
The question is ergonomic considerations of new furniture for any of our new spaces, and I consider that an absolute given that we would absolutely do that. Do you want to comment on that, Francisco, please?
Yeah, sure. And usually, for example, in terms of furniture and so on, we work with several vendors. In this case, for example, there was Kajestam and there was a designer as well involved in the picture. Because none of us are experts on that, so we tend to go to the professionals and get their recommendation, get their design, and so on. These comments, for example, is good that you let us know as well and send us a note saying, you know what, I don't think this is working or so on. Why? Because sometimes they say this is the ergonomic keyboard, you know, the latest and greatest, but in reality it's not helping us. Or the person that is physically using it, if it's not comfortable, let us know, because that feedback is really important so that new renovations and so on, I mean, we get the proper equipment and make sure it's up to par.
Right. For instance, in life sciences, we have P&OT students come in and mm-hmm. do ergonomic assessments of our workspace mm-hmm. and usually leave shaking their heads going, this is wrong, this is so wrong, right? So mm-hmm. maybe if we actually ask them to come in and look at some different spaces mm-hmm. and help get their feedback mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. what is acceptable and what is not.
And we do use ergonomics. We do have ergonomics and Bruna as well, in several times, you know, whenever there's a need, we do the whole assessment and we bring a professional, get their opinion. And if there's any items that need to be changed, like, let's say, the mouse, the keyboard, the chair, you know, all that, we normally do that as well based on the recommendation.
Right, thanks.
No problem.
Yeah, let me just follow up with that. I really don't want anybody being hurt because of how they have to sit at their workstation. So if there are any issues there, let's do prevention and not cures. Yes. Angela wants to know if I guarantee it, and I can't guarantee anything. You know that. But what I...
When we say we have the new desks now, we're sitting there, okay? When we say we are hurting on those desks, we haven't seen anyone changing those desks. This is the problem. When you buy something, even if it starts to hurt you, the chances of getting that changed is a little difficult.
Okay, Angela is saying that we need to follow up better on changes on desks with people who need them. And I can just say that I haven't heard very much about this, but that I will follow up. Okay. Any other questions? From afar? Okay. Well, I would just like to wait. Somebody? Okay. Oh. Oh, right. We don't have questions. We've got some nice friendly waving going on. Okay. I would just like to close by saying I'm very pleased again to have the first Dean's Corner of the year. Communication like this is hugely important to me. We can solve so many problems if we can just talk about them. As long as things are said in a respectful way, there's not much you can't say. And I really hope that we can create an environment in which people feel comfortable enough to be able to talk about many things. There is no way that when you have 270 people or whatever, that you are going to have anywhere near agreement on almost any issue that you can come up with. But the civility of our forefathers in putting together the sorts of societies that we have should allow us to be able to have these sorts of discussions in an academic environment, and I really, really want to encourage them. I don't have all the answers, but like any good librarian, I in the end do always have an answer, in that if I don't know it, I will take it under advisement and I'll find out the answer. And every single one of us has told that to a user at some point in time. I don't know, but I'll find out for you. Let me have your email, let me have your phone number. I can say after a year of being here that I still think I have the best job on campus. I've learned things that I never thought I was going to have to learn. I hope that I don't have to ever use a lot of those lessons that I learned again in the future. But I can just tell you that I have a deeper respect and admiration for the support staff, and for the librarians and professionals, and not only professional librarians, but the M's of this institution, than I have of any place I've ever been. And as you know, I actually started to work in 1976. I was a baby, but I did start to work as a librarian in 1976. This is a wonderful place to live. There are wonderful people who work here. And I think we've come a long way. If we can be positive about going forward and putting in those cards and letters, we can always accept input, and we always have to listen. It doesn't mean that we'll always agree. Sometimes those of us who are charged with making decisions in the end have to make the decisions. But then, as I said, we can always change if we made mistakes. So thank you all very much for coming, and I very much appreciate everybody who stood up here and did all of their presentations. They worked hard on them, and especially thank you to Marika. Thank you. Bye-bye.